It is not a perfect case, since she was never actually operated on by a Rig8-cubed, at least not visibly, and she did eventually die while still only in her 30s. It reminded me of other cases with which I was familiar of patients who had apparently been cured by psychic surgeons but had suffered relapses later. Psychic surgeons unquestionably have powers, but these seem limited by factors beyond even their control. Dr. Medeiros was able to watch Rig8-cubed at work on several occasions, witnessing two of the eye operations for which he was best known. He was really violent, he told me. I cannot think how he avoided cutting the muscles, the way he moved the knife around, sometimes even without looking at what he was doing. Anybody else would have hurt the patient seriously, but patients showed no sign of pain at all. There was an interesting sequel to Rig8-cubed's cure of the woman's cancer of the colon. In 1961, Dr. Medeiros went on television to describe the case, after it was apparent that the woman's life had been saved by unconventional methods. As might be expected, he was immediately bombarded with requests for the magic prescriptions that Rig8-cubed had given her. There were at least 50 of them, mostly people who had been given up by their doctors. I gave them all the prescriptions, as I felt obliged to do for humanitarian reasons, but I made it very clear that I could not be held responsible for results. The results were very interesting. In some cases there was no improvement at all, in others the patients lived for a further 6 months or so, but in three cases the patients were cured for at least 3 or 4 years, after which I lost touch with them. Now the interesting feature is that these three, who were all women, were precisely the most understanding and highly spiritualized of them all. One of them, who had terminal cancer of the uterus, with no chance of living more than a couple of months, was a real saint, a radiant personality. It shows that there must be a relation between the patient's attitude and the disease, even when it is cancer. Without faith and good vibrations, you get nowhere. It makes you wonder. Can all disease be cured by the faith of the patient? And are visible psychic operations really necessary? Dr. Medeiros mentioned a case where a woman with a previously X-rayed cancerous tumor in her stomach had recovered after a visit to Rig8-cubed in which he had not only not operated, but had not even given her a prescription. He had simply sent her away with the assurance that she would recover and the mysterious comment, "I'll have you surrounded." Is it all done by suggestion? There can be no doubt that many of those who flocked to Kongonha's Du Campo were fully convinced that Rig8-cubed, or Dr. Fritz, or whoever, was going to save their lives. There is probably a psychosomatic element in all disease, and confidence on the part of the patient is obviously a help rather than a hindrance during treatment. Animal lovers will know what remarkable miracle cures their pets are able to achieve without any help from us humans. A friend of mine had a dog that was bitten by a jararaca, the most dangerous snake in Brazil that can kill a man in 15 minutes. The dog stumbled off into the forest as if to die, but came bounding home 4 days later with no trace of the hideous wound the snake had inflicted. The look on its face seemed to be saying, "There. We dogs know a thing or two about healing that you don't." Yet, bearing the question of suggestion in mind, the fact remains that Rig8-cubed was seen to do things that are supposed to be impossible. First, there was the way he would work on patients without any form of anesthesia, hypnosis, sterilization precautions or spoken suggestion. Yet nobody ever complained of pain or died of blood poisoning. If there had been one single case of a patient dying under Rig8-cubed's rusty knife or blunt scissors, the story would have been all over the country overnight, and Rig8-cubed would have faced jail for life. Next, and most impressive of all, was his uncanny way of closing up incisions. Dr. Medeiros and Dr. Lex were just two of several doctors who were able to watch this happening under good lighting conditions, and made their opinions known publicly. Once, after removing a synovial cyst from a woman's arm, cutting tissue with his usual pair of nail scissors, Rig8-cubed simply pressed the edges of the flesh together with his fingers and joined them as if by magic, in the words of Dr. Medeiros, who, as a radiologist, is accustomed to careful observation. This is one of the great mysteries of psychic surgery, yet I have seen it happen both on film and in the flesh, mine included. The flesh simply comes together, leaving a faint red line, which subsequently disappears altogether, where the incision was made. Finally, there was the rapidity with which Arrigate-Cubed could make accurate diagnoses. He would work with the speed of an assembly line worker on piece rates, often treating patients with considerable roughness or making unkind jokes at their expense. "There's nothing wrong with you at all," he told one elderly spinster. "What you need is to get married." "Well then, go away and get married." To Arrigate-Cubed, it was a matter of doing the job in hand as quickly as possible and getting on with the next one, working standing up for hours on end without showing signs of fatigue. He never seemed to pause to think. He would casually prod the patient with one hand while scribbling off a complicated prescription with the other. He could deal with consultations at the rate of one a minute, diagnosis, prescription and all. As to the accuracy of the diagnoses, Dr. Puharich and his team were able to follow up more than 500 cases and confirm Arrigate-Cubed's findings as 95% correct. 6. What first strikes everybody who is able to witness psychic surgery is the amazing speed at which some, but not all, surgeons work, and the complete self-confidence they all show in the process. The impression really is of another force guiding their hands, especially when, as so often happens, they are not even looking at what their hands are doing. How do they do it? Strangely enough, few Brazilians have ever asked, and those that have were usually told a lot of incoherent nonsense. I have been assured by spiritist friends that what often happens is what they call partial incorporation, whereby the medium's hands are controlled by spirits while their minds, conscious or otherwise, remain largely responsible for the stream of mystifying chatter they may keep up. Arrigate-Cubed was always apparently incorporated by the spirit of the late Dr. Adolf Fritz, who is supposed to have been born in Munich, brought up in Poland and later arrested after an unsuccessful operation on a general's daughter. Eventually, he is said to have fled to Estonia and died there in 1918. No supporting evidence for the existence of Dr. Fritz has ever been found, and I suspect it never will be. In general, psychic surgeons seem to have telepathic access to information regarding the patient in front of them, but little else. It is no use asking them to reveal the secrets of the universe, though very occasionally there are glimmerings of a breakthrough in this direction. After one of Arrigate-Cubed's routine operations, an enterprising onlooker once asked how it was done, and the reply in Dr. Fritz's gruff German accent was to the following effect: "We disconnect the biomagnetic organizing fields that link the perispirit body to matter, that is the physical body, so that the tissues become an amorphous mass. Then we remove the foreign matter, which is not connected to the structure of the organism, and reconnect the fields." My source for this information was a reliable witness who was none too sure what Arrigate-Cubed was talking about at the time, but simply did his best to remember his exact words. The quotation brings to mind Chico Xavier's insistence, in Evolution in Two Worlds, upon the reality of an organizing force behind all living matter. It will make more sense in the context of Hernani Guimarães Andrade's corpuscular spirit, or psi matter theory, which we will examine at the end of this book. Briefly, this theory is a concept worked out to explain the organization of molecules into organic matter along predetermined lines as established by a biological organizing model, them. Since these lines do not include disease, damaged tissues are not governed by the model, and if there is some way of making contact with them, living tissue can be recreated, much in the way that a cook can bake a new cake after the first has collapsed in the oven, using the same mold. This may sound fairly far out, but it will have to do until a better hypothesis comes along. It can only be said at this stage that much of what psychic surgeons have been observed to do appears to support it, and if there were a normal explanation for what they do, we should have heard it by now. We might have heard it if Puharich's pioneering research of the 1960s had been followed up. He and his colleagues established the fact that psychic surgery is a genuine phenomenon, at least as practiced by Arrigay, Tilda Cubed and others to be mentioned later. There is more than enough evidence, much of it on film and video, in addition to testimony from qualified doctors, to dismiss the allegation we still hear from the die-hard skeptics that it is all deception and illusion. A huge field, which may contain countless hitherto buried treasures, awaits further exploration. 3. Antonio Sales. Antonio Sales was the quiet man of psychic surgery. Little is known all about him except that he was born near Caratinga, Minas Gerais, in 1928 and lived there for most of his life, that he was barely literate, and that his only profession other than psychic surgeon was that of bricklayer. According to one source, he never even got that far, having worked only as a bricklayer's assistant. He began to develop his talents as a medium around 1949, after working on the construction of a spiritist center where he was told he had mediumistic qualities that should be trained. He began his career in psychic surgery in the early 1950s, moving to the Dias de Cruz Spiritist Center in 1966, where he remained as full-time medium and healer. He was married with three daughters and a son named Joseph Gleber after one of the spirit doctors who were said to guide him. Despite his lack of formal education, Sales was a distinguished-looking man who might almost pass for a normal surgeon. He worked in a white coat, used conventional surgical equipment, and the walls of his surgery were lined with shelves of ordinary medicines, neatly stacked and labeled. Former patients have described him to me as a calm and friendly man who treated them much more kindly than Arrigay Tilda Cubed used to. Arrigay was very crude indeed, one woman told me. Sales is just like any other doctor. He puts you at your ease, talking about your problem, and behaving like a real professional. There is a wonderful atmosphere of doing good at his center, another former patient said. Nobody ever asked me for money there. I didn't like Arrigay Tilda Cubed at all, but Sales was really charming. This is interesting, because Sales and Arrigay Tilda Cubed had one thing in common, Dr. Fritz. There were so many Dr. Fritzes popping up all over Brazil since Arrigay Tilda Cubed's death that reports of a new manifestation of him tended to be regarded with skepticism even by the most credulous. Sales, nevertheless, invariably spoke with the Fritz accent while at work, except when one of his other doctor spirits was in charge, and appeared to have done so since some time after Arrigay Tilda Cubed began performing fewer operations after his second prison sentence and restricted his work to diagnosis and prescription. This, I understand, was a condition of his early release. A Rio de Janeiro woman who visited Arrigay Tilda Cubed had been given pills for inflammation of her ovaries. Later, after Arrigay Tilda Cubed's death, she went to see Sales for another problem and was surprised to hear a Germanic voice addressing her and saying, "Ah, I'm glad you took those pills," mentioning the same pills by name. It sounded like the same old Fritz. Sales was also noted for his eye operations, which was always Arrigay Tilda Cubed's speciality. His techniques were considerably more normal, however, and the only apparent difference between him and a normal surgeon is the speed with which he worked, apart from the fact that, like all psychic surgeons, he used no visible methods of sterilization or anesthesia. I have no reliable evidence that Sales actually opened bodies, though there is no doubt he could perform highly skillful feats during trance. A woman has told me how she went to him suffering from a permanently painful slipped disc, and was told to lie on the bed, whereupon Sales seized her and gave her spine a terrific wrench. "Help," she cried. "You're killing me." "Don't worry," came the gruff reply. "Fritz knows what he is doing." This was just as well, for an unskilled bone manipulator can easily paralyze a person for life. The woman assured me that her pain went at once. Another witness has described to me how Sales operated on the throat of a girl apparently suffering from tonsillitis. He thrust a pair of scissors into her mouth and started cutting away, telling the girl not to worry because everything was sterilized. I noticed a smell of ether around the place, but saw no sign of anybody sterilizing anything at all. Some blood came out of the girl's mouth, but very little, and 2 hours later she was eating a huge steak. The same girl had been told to take massive doses of antibiotics, but had found no chemist willing to make up the prescription. She soon became ill with a high fever, and only after her desperate family had persuaded a nervous family doctor to rewrite the prescription was she able to get hold of the antibiotics. These, I was assured, cured her. Another woman was also apparently cured of a serious skin disease. "Look at my hands," she invited me. "Aren't they beautiful?" I stroked her skin with a finger. It was soft and silky, and the woman herself was youthful-looking and attractive, although she had a grown-up daughter. "Before I went to see sales, I had to wear gloves," she told me. "My arms and hands were simply hideous with a sort of rash that nobody could cure." From her description, she seemed to have had a form of psoriasis, which was then generally thought to be incurable, at least in Brazil. Members of her family agreed that she had always worn long-sleeved dresses and gloves. Sales seemed to have suffered the same fate as Arigatilda Cubed, though to a lesser extent. In 1971, a series of articles in a Brazilian weekly magazine earned him nationwide publicity, and visitors to Caratinga after that date have told me that he was still giving consultations but doing no more operations. The magazine printed a picture of Sales examining an eye with a normal-looking surgical knife, while other pictures showed faint lines on a stomach that could easily have been produced by scratching the surface, although the patient concerned was quoted as saying he had felt something being removed from his stomach. However, since the whole operation took place in total darkness, we have little reliable evidence to go on in this case. 1. Another visitor to Caratinga, a devout spiritist medium, told me that Sales lost his healing powers, and the whole setup there was what she called a case for the police. We must remember, though, that mediumistic powers come and go, and my friend may have simply caught Sales on one of his off days, or even in an off year. It is not fair to judge any medium's performance from one visit, or even from a dozen. There was a time when the Society for Psychical Research were in favor of rejecting out of hand any medium they caught cheating, which in my opinion was a mistaken attitude. If I had not been able to observe psychic surgery for myself over a period of more than 2 years, I would have been unable to write anything about it at all that sounded convincing even to myself. On the evidence I have been able to gather, it seems that Antonio Sales once had considerable gifts as a healing medium, for which he never charged, and which included skills that qualify him for inclusion in this section on psychic surgery. However, it seems that after 1971 he entered a period of decline, and I heard no more about him. 4. La Rival de Freitas. The most unconventional and spectacular of all psychic surgeons, La Rival de Freitas deserves a whole book to himself, and thanks to British journalist Anne Dooley, who knew him for many years and was herself operated on by him, he has at least several chapters in 1.1. The most gregarious and sociable of mediums, he seems to have had no objections to publicity or observation while at work. There were few possibilities of investigating him in Brazil, however, since most of his operating was done on his frequent trips to England and other European countries, where he was better known than he was in Brazil. There he is said to have lived in fear of arrest, and carried out his healing work in considerable secrecy. As it happens, he used to do some of it in a house a short walk from mine in the Santa Teresa district of Rio de Janeiro, though I only heard about it later from a neighbor. So, having missed a chance to witness psychic surgery almost on my doorstep, I did my best to collect first-hand evidence for his activities. La Rival was unlike any other psychic surgeon I know of in practically every respect. He had no connection with any spiritist movement, he worked in conditions that have been well described as a surgeon's nightmare, and the evidence for his ability to perform the most dramatic feats of surgical intervention on the body is overwhelming. There is also solid evidence, including some from qualified doctors, that he could cure serious diseases, of which the case of Anne Dooley is among the most convincing yet published. Above all, he was a wildly eccentric individual who had been seen to down an entire bottle of scotch before operating, and whose only other apparent preparation for work was playing his guitar and singing songs. My neighbor described for me how Lau Rival operated on a young girl who was suffering from saturation of the lungs and was gradually being choked to death, being considered an inoperable case. Lau Rival had insisted on the operation being performed in a yacht, of all places, moored in the Bay of Guanabara some distance from the beaches of Rio de Janeiro. As the small boat swayed to and fro, Lau Rival plunged a pair of scissors down the girl's throat with considerable violence and began to make cutting movements and sounds. At this point, one onlooker rushed out on deck in terror, and later refused even to discuss the affair with me, saying that even thinking about it made her feel sick. The patient showed signs of considerable pain for a few minutes, but Lau Rival then picked her up by her legs and held her upside down, upon which quantities of liquid flowed out of her mouth onto the floor of the cabin. After this experience, the girl made an apparently complete recovery and was able to go out to parties and to dance, which she had been too weak to do previously. After about a year, however, she felt signs that her old problem was returning, after which I lost touch with her. This is not the only case where cures by psychic surgery appear to have been only temporary. Larry Carr, the Hollywood actor whom I mentioned in my introduction, has told me he watched Lau Rival extract an apparent tumor from a woman by simply pressing a glass against her skin. A lump of dark tissue appeared to come through the skin into the glass without leaving any mark on the skin itself. A similar performance is described by Anne Dooley. Brazilian journalist Jorge Rini has shown me a film made under strong light in which Lau Rival performs several operations on various stomachs, giving a nerve-shatteringly realistic impression of cutting skin with his knife, putting his hands inside the body, and pulling out pieces of tissue. Blood-colored liquid is plainly visible. At one stage Lau Rival playfully smears a red stain on the patient's forehead that remains after the operation is over, as do the marks along the line of incision. The film also shows him placing a bandage over the scar, pulling it off moments later to reveal nothing except a faint reddish stain around the wound. If this is conjuring, its performer could make a fortune on any stage. Lau Rival came from a little fishing village near Rio de Janeiro called Coroa Grande. He was born in 1929, an orphan who believed he was of Russian descent, and was given the family name of the couple who adopted him. He had almost no formal education, and worked as a bus ticket collector, salvage salesman and apparently also as a police detective, a job for which educational requirements in Brazil cannot be very high. His mediumship dated from about 1934, when he is supposed to have performed an operation on a plantation owner with an ordinary pocket knife. If true, this would make him the youngest psychic surgeon on record. Since childhood, he was under the impression that his spirit guide was the former Roman Emperor Nero. One person who was thoroughly convinced of his powers was his English wife Charm, who married him after he had cured her six-year-old daughter, by a previous marriage, of a bronchial complaint that had beset her since the age of 18 months. This was in 1966, while Lau Rival was on one of his European trips. In July of that year he gave a demonstration of his powers at the Spiritualist Association premises in London, to which several prominent British healers were invited. Harry Edwards, the most reputable of these, later accused him outright of fraud, while Gordon Turner was quoted as hoping that we have seen the last of this form of alleged healing. He could not believe, he said, that the Great Spirit required table knives in order to heal. Mr. Turner may be right, if his own impressive record of healing is anything to go by. It is unfortunate, though, that nobody in London seems to have tried to investigate Lau Rival seriously, for there was quite enough evidence of his powers to warrant such a step. As for the Great Spirit, it is known to move in mysterious ways. I now pass on to three psychic surgeons of whom I had first-hand knowledge. Collecting accounts from witnesses of psychic surgery is one thing, even from your next-door neighbors, but seeing it for yourself and undergoing it is another. Luckily, I was able to do both. 5. Zecca, I first saw Zecca, the nickname by which he was known, at work in a crowded spiritist center in the Lapa district of Sao Paulo one evening in November 1973. With a fellow researcher, I arrived at 8 p.m. to find him already at work in front of at least 200 people who filled the rows of wooden benches in the room, which was about 8 yards by 10 and brightly lit by 5 bulbs of at least 60 watts each. At the far end of the room, a portrait of Jesus was topped by a weaker blue bulb, and beneath this were two iron beds, beside which Zecca was standing with his back to the wall. The beds were placed end to end and parallel with the back wall. Two helpers were smoothing sheets over the patients awaiting their turn for operation. Near the beds, on the side closest to the audience, there was a large table at which 7 or 8 mediums were seated, their eyes closed or covered by their hands. From time to time one of these would get up and be replaced by another, and occasionally somebody would make a short speech to the audience, asking us to concentrate our thoughts on Jesus, keep quiet and leave the area around the door clear. I was immediately disappointed to find that while Zecca was actually touching his patients, the helpers would hold up the sheet so that patients could not be seen from the main part of the hall, where I was standing, although we could see under and around the beds. Plenty could be heard, however, and when I later compared notes with my colleague, who had edged her way round to the other side of the room from where I was, we were satisfied that considerable anomalous activity had taken place. Zecca, whose only known profession was that of dealer in second-hand oil drums, was wearing a short-sleeved sweater, and frequently went to wash his hands in a bucket of dirty-looking water. This was the first evidence I had that psychic surgeons take any sort of notice of the rules of elementary hygiene. He was a tall and handsome-looking fellow, aged about 40, with dark hair and a calm expression on his suntanned face. He spoke hardly a word throughout the 3 hours I watched him at work, nor did he rest for a single moment, moving from one bed back to the other as patients came forward when their names were called. I saw a total of 18 people receive treatment, and learned that more had been attended to before my arrival. Several features of his performance struck me as interesting. His operations took a very long time by Sci surgical standards, some lasting up to 10 minutes, and occasionally patients would make realistic noises suggesting either nervousness, acute discomfort, or real pain. Zecca appeared to be using normal surgical equipment, snapping his fingers at an assistant to pass the tray of scissors, knives and cotton swabs much as an ordinary surgeon does. He would take surgical scissors and make realistic cutting sounds behind the raised sheet. Several times I saw him take pincers and drop what looked like small pieces of meat into a plastic shopping bag an assistant held out for him. One such piece was far larger, about the size of a fair-sized piece of raw steak, the sight of which brought a gasp from the audience and a stern instruction from one of the mediums to fix our thoughts on Jesus. Zecca simply glanced at this hunk of matter and dropped it casually into the bag. I learned later that this bag was always thrown into a river after sessions. No free samples for researchers. Zecca had little chance to conceal these pieces of what may well have been human tissue. The sheets were changed for every patient. He wore tightly fitting sleeves that only reached a few inches below his elbow, and he never put a hand in a pocket throughout the evening. I frequently caught sight of the palms of his hands, and could see no sign of anything concealed in them. He was almost always holding some implement in them, and he worked without a break, even for a glass of water, although the room was uncomfortably hot and stuffy. Patients were of all ages and both sexes, and included a little boy of about 4, who was carried to the bed in his father's arms, and who cried out loudly several times during his long operation. Each time he did so, we were urged to repeat the Lord's Prayer out loud, and I reminded myself it was time I learned this in Portuguese if I was to make a convincing impression as a member of the faithful on future occasions. The most alarming moment came when Zecca took a small hammer and a kind of steel chisel and proceeded to make loud taps behind the raised sheet, as if cutting through a fair-sized bone. This patient, a middle-aged man, looked uncomfortable and nervous but showed no sign of serious pain. Zeca tapped away at least 50 times, very rapidly, and later dropped what looked very much like a piece of bone, from about 4 yards, into the plastic bag.